It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host.
Hold right there. There's only one way to truly begin this program. Only one.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rush Limbaugh!
They say that I'm sleaze and elitist, you please. Everybody disagrees with my rapid is that I'm horrendous, I'm appalling. My ratings now are falling, cause I'm so full of bull, so full of crap. With condescending cries, making money, selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts. I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud, can you dig it? I'm a sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic putz.
I'm a Nazi.
That's right.
I really am,
cause I'm a Nazi.
Nazi.
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class, cause I'm a fat conservative butthead with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative butthead.
Hey,
with the face of a horse's ass.
I have a subhuman figure, a huge rear end. My brain? That's another story.
It's quite another
story. I have a face the size of a washtub. And my ass is as big as Missouri. Yes!
This bastard is sick. He's a fat mom is big. And his ass is as big as Missouri.
Yes, Curry Bob! Manipulating statements, exaggerating the truth. I can't believe they hate my show. It's science. It's not just because I'm stupid. It's not just because I'm scum. It's just because Republicans are liars. I am heartless. I am vain, insensitive, insane. They say that I'm a national disgrace. I am nasty, insulting, basically revolting. I'm a concentrated pile of human waste. Because I'm a Nazi.
I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle classes. I'm a sick Republican sleazeball with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a sick Republican sleazeball with the face of a horse's ass.
They say that this is not about my vanity. They doubt my sanity. They think I'm nuts. I am a cyst on the ass of humanity. New Republican slogan, read my thoughts. From the bowels of the
age
comes the voice of Rush Limbaugh. Because I'm a Nazi.
I really am,
because I'm a Nazi. You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class, because I'm a fear-mongering scumbag with the face of a horse's ass.
Fat conservative butthead.
Hey, sick Republican sleazeball.
Fear-mongering scumbag.
Oh,
egotistical ass-bite.
Mean-spirited, hog-wallering fat conservative puss.
With the face
of a
Yes. So, my friends, America the way it's meant to be. That is, without Rusty Rush Limbaugh. He's dead. Yes. Yes. The billable Rick asks to get the program started. Is Rush Limbaugh really dead? Unbelievable. Oh, it is. It's believable. It's absolutely true. I had a note right before the program from Scott in San Diego that just said, all caps, damn, Robin. Hi, I'm Robin. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live on the internet. If you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours of this program, when it's live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Well, go on over to HeadOn.live. Click on Chat Room. Jump right in, and you'll be met by early arrivers Otto and Ralps and Squeaky and Stockton Larry. And, well, I'm the only one doing any moderating there right now, so that's okay. Midweek pinch hit chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgia, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgia Stan, will be along presently. Mm-hmm. And I had a whole bunch of stuff for a nice midweek program. Had some good prayer meeting Wednesday stuff. And then the goddess of irony decided to deliver us a great big rubber chicken perched upon a whoopee cushion, vibrating upon a joy buzzer, by bumping off Rush Limbaugh on this 7th day of February 2021, a prayer meeting Wednesday, when prayers are indeed answered. And as I pointed out before the program, Scott in San Diego said, "Damn, Robin, just woke up. Haven't yet had my first sip of coffee. Fired up the laptop and just now read the headline, Rush Limbaugh, dead at 70. The conjuring up power of the horn scares me sometimes. Just wow. As for him, that boy put the mo in mofo." Yep, he's gone. And we can, there's none of that. There's none of that misty, teary-eyed Bedford Falls, Jimmy Stewart, Clarence the apprentice angel bullshit, where the world, we find out how much worse the world would have been without Rush Limbaugh in it. No. There is a compelling case to be made that if anybody ever builds a time machine, if they will simply go back to, he was 71 years old, and I guess he was born in 1951, so he didn't make it to 72. No, didn't make it to 70. Wait, Cyphron, 51, 21, 70. Shit! That means he was either a Capricorn or, horror of horrors, an Aquarius. Ew! Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's a... Oh, dear. But, no, there is a compelling case to be made that this country would have been manifestly better off had that man never been born. And like I said, if anybody ever gets around to building a time machine, just go back to 1951, put a pillow over little baby Rush Limbaugh's face, and watch America improve. Now, it might cost the time traveler their life, assuming that they are born after this date. But that's the kind of paradox that you run into when you start messing around with time travel. For lo, these many years, Mike Malloy has referred to him as the Pig Man. And in times like this, I think of people who are no longer with us, like Bart Kopp. Bart Kopp, for those of you who were devotees of his... I said it was the 17th of February. We'll have to check the tape, but I'm pretty sure I said it's the 17th day of February. But for those who followed Bart Kopp's page and the brilliance that it was, you might recall that it began as a bulletin board way back in the days of internet bulletin boards. Bart Kopp, we'll just call him Bart Kopp because that's how everybody knew him. Bart Kopp started his page as something called Rush Limbaugh, Lying Nazi Whore. And I couldn't help thinking of that when the program began. And when I heard the news. Yeah. Rush Limbaugh, lying Nazi whore. And while we will probably talk about some of his more repulsive, I did say 7th, son of a gun. Okay, well, it's the 17th of February, 2021. Are we clear on that? Okay, I don't know why I said 7th. Maybe I didn't see the 1. Maybe I didn't carry the 10. I don't know. But no, he dropped dead on the 7th. And you know what? What if, wait a minute. What if there's a giant conspiracy? Because in all the stories I read, it said that Rush Limbaugh died of complications from lung cancer. What if it wasn't lung cancer at all? Yeah. What if he died of COVID? That would be a complication of lung cancer, wouldn't it? But they wouldn't dare print that because, of course, among other things in this last year of his miserable, misspent, misbegotten, best part of him ran down his mother's leg life. He was, of course, a COVIDiot. He was a mask hole. He was a denier. At every opportunity in his misbegotten life, his misanthropic existence, Rush Limbaugh made the wrong choice. He was such a bad DJ, he got fired twice in Pittsburgh and I think twice in the Kansas City market. And that, I believe, was the beginning of his time selling hot dogs for the Kansas City Royals, maybe. I'm not sure. I could have the timeline wrong. I frankly don't care. But my God, like Claudius pouring poison into the ear of Hamlet Sr. and killing him as he napped beneath a tree in his garden there at Elsinore for 3 hours a day for decades. Rush Limbaugh poured poison into the ear of a napping America. Bill in Allentown lets us know Rushbo's birthday was 5 days ago, just saying. Oh, that means he is an Aquarius. Yuck! And more yuck! No, wait. No, not 5 days. Okay, no. Scott's taking issue with you, Bill. Rush was born January 12th, so he had just turned 70. Although he wasn't an Aquarius, sign of the water bearer, he spent nearly his entire life carrying water for the GOP. Oh! No, he was a Capricorn. Randy Radar, on the other hand, says he was actually a jiggling jellyfish hybrid. A monkey jellyfish hybrid from the wet markets of Old Kowloon. Just ask Alex Jones, who desperately, like so many other pissant broadcasters in this country, wanted to be Rush Limbaugh. Yeah, even someone who went on to become a revered liberal broadcaster, Ed Schultz. Ed Schultz spent the first 20 years or more of his career in North Dakota trying to be North Dakota's answer to Rush Limbaugh. And in his own liberal career, when he was written up, I think, in Esquire, he was described as the liberal answer to Rush Limbaugh. Hell, that would have been suing words as far as I was concerned. Yeah. So we'll be talking about that this evening. I'll be talking about it more and more. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. And this program is no different, even though it turns out to be a celebratory program, this prayer meeting Wednesday. And so we send out thanks to our 17th day of the month subscribers. Thank you to Nancy, and thank you to Labor Man. And thank you very kindly to David for jumping in on our anonymous When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge. Thank you to Henry jumping in on that as well. I did not realize it, but yes, that challenge did get met. And so consequently, our fundraising goal at the moment stands at $680. So we that's funding for yesterday and today, and $80 of Monday. Megan with a Megan with an observation. Flush Flimball died in the middle of Black History Month. The goddess of irony at work again. Sacrifice a rubber chicken to her at midnight. Oh, I will, I will. Because, of course, Flush Flimball made his career being a racist. And every time he got caught being a racist, he would say, "My friends, I didn't mean it. I am a comedian." And like I said, as much of the conversation as we have in this regard is going to be about the media as it is about him. Because lo and behold, it was right there in digital print today. And I knew I was going to see it before I saw it. Headline from the Washington Post. Rush Limbaugh, conservative radio provocateur and cultural phenomenon, dies at 70. Cultural phenomenon? The Beatles were a cultural phenomenon. Rock and roll, cultural phenomenon. The electric slide was a cultural phenomenon. But then they doubled down. Rush Limbaugh, who deployed comic bombast and relentless bashing of liberal. No, that was not comic bombast. That was just pure 200 proof, unmitigated hate. David in South Carolina Stan says, "I know the devil's brewed up a special batch of sweet tea for today's grand welcome celebration festivities." It was Rush Limbaugh who injected the poison into our culture of the word feminazi. Feminazi. Equating women who simply wanted to be treated with equality with a murderous regime that slaughtered 6 million men, women, and children. Feminazi. He called Sandra Fluck a slut for having the audacity to open her female mouth and suggest to Congress that birth control should be free to women under the Affordable Care Act. Yeah. So, a note coming in from Terry in Saigon. "I'm still out here listening to my little touch of home. No need to repeat this on air, but..." Okay. Thank you, Terry. I'm glad you are. And microphones, I mean, if you want a pro one, you can't beat the Electra Voice, the EV20. I mean, RE20. I'm sorry, the RE20. It's what I'm using right now. But Rode makes one very similar to the RE20 that's fantastic, too. "Don't traumatize me." Flavio says, "I'm an Aquarius, almost a Pisces. Aquarii are usually nice people. I would know. I are one." Right. Uh,
Yeah, the emails have been pouring in since the news broke. Cynthia in the Bay Area. Yay, Rush is dead. Sorry, but that'll have me dancing in the street, bad back or not. That filth has done so much damage to this country with his lies and brainwashing. Good riddance. okay. Dave, number 11, pointing out, have to drop an achieved room temperature, as in Rush Limbaugh achieved room temperature today. Backflipping Rush Limbaugh, arguably the worst DJ ever to grace the airwaves of the United States, graciously passed on to his long frozen home in hell. May he rest in pieces, says Dave in the blind. The boys down at the shop are probably positively ecstatic. And of course, Trump Tower demolished, because that happened today too. And Limbaugh's life abolished. A good day, Robin. Again, in the words of Mike Malloy, I hate these people. After hearing you last night, Robin, talking about the hoarding of masks, thousands of nurses perishing during the Dondemic because of the lack of proper PPE. And since Ronald Reagan took office in 1981, the United States now ranks last in life expectancy of the top 37 industrialized nations in the world. I just can only feel hideous hatred of these so-called right-to-life hypocrites who just continue with their bullshit blather about the sanctity of life. Matt in San Francisco brought tears to my eyes when he mentioned how difficult it was in the 80s for LGBT people, considering the asshole Ronald Reagan never once mentioned the word AIDS until 6 years into his presidency, when he was basically forced to recognize the disease, as well depicted in a terrific movie in The Band Played On featuring Matthew Modine and Alan Alda. Yeah, he only noticed it when Nancy noticed it, because Rock Hudson had it. Jeffrey, of course, can't resist.
Yes, Ronald Reagan, as well as being senile, was just plain ignorant as well, because when one of Reagan's personal aides confronted him about the AIDS crisis, and Reagan just replied,
yes, I'll have two AIDS candies because I love Hedy Lamarr.
Hedley!
The dumb shit Reagan did not even realize that his personal aide was speaking of the pandemic, not the weight loss candy that Hedy Lamarr once hawked.
Yes, you could say Ronald Reagan aided and abetted the proliferation of AIDS back in the 80s, and that, along with Iran-Contra, should have gotten him time in the... Oh, God, wait for it. So much waiting. Yes, ignoring AIDS and aiding and abetting in both the AIDS crisis and Iran-Contra should have landed Reagan in the... stock AIDS. Good
job, Jeffrey. Jeffrey's correct. Hedy, pronounced Hedy, not
Hedley,
was a very heady, intelligent individual, as she was actually an inventor as well as a great actor, actress, who invented a device that assisted in the creation of today's Wi-Fi. The Austrian actor-inventor developed the idea of frequency hopping, which kept the enemy in World War II from intercepting guidance signals used to maneuver Navy torpedoes in World War II. The technology would later find its way into cell phones, GPS, Bluetooth, and the aforementioned Wi-Fi devices. Thanks to actors like Ronald Reagan, there was an assumption that many movie stars were vain creatures incapable of cognitive thought. Well, Hedy Lamarr was the antithesis of that notion in the motion picture world, as she was a genius offstage and an A-list actor in Hollywood. She worked with top names in the field like Clark Gable, Jimmy Stewart, Spencer Tracy, and, of course, Jeffrey, as the next act.
Ronald Reagan was considered a B actor, and the B stood for bullshit.
And the ticker goes ding, 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 ding. That's a six bell, yes. And Jeffrey will read the ticker.
Speaking of bullshit, it is 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time Zone, and the ticker reads as follows. The king of bullshit is dead. Rush Limbaugh has died.
The ticker continues, and for those of you concerned about your meth delivery, just contact the folks down the street at, wait for it, please just contact the folks down the street at Meth-a-Largo. Yes, Robin, the goddess of irony has struck again, as last night you and Scotty ended the show wondering of the fate of Rush Limbaugh, and today I commenced my journal with Ronald Reagan. As far as I'm concerned, Rush Limbaugh was the daily spokesman for Ronald Reagan.
As Limbaugh came on the scene in 1988, just as Reagan was leaving the White House, Limbaugh was the continuation of the Reagan presidency and daily spewed out more disgusting, disingenuous bullshit than Ronald Reagan could ever have spun. The Reagan Rush era has done more damage to this country than we can ever begin to calculate. Limbaugh, who gaslighted America on a daily basis, was the equivalent of a felon as he was arrested for illegal drug use and should have done time for turning his maid into a drug mule. He was a misogynist, racist pig who used bigotry, sexism, and hate to promote Reaganomics, which hurt so many people with his EIB network excellence in bullshit. As our pal Michael in Madison wondered earlier today, gosh, I wonder if Rush died on the golden EIB ventilator. Joey continues, as I was running around Gojo Towers here in downtown Akron, the good goddess struck again as Akron native Chrissy Hines' song came on the Muzak. No, not the theme song for Rush Limbaugh's show Ohio, but Back on the Chain Gang. And I just could not help but think of that. That is what it felt like when I graduated from college in 1988. And there were no jobs to be had after Reaganomics had economically destroyed states like Ohio. Good factory jobs had left the state, and there were very few middle management jobs to be had. I ended up working several years for some really Reagan-esque low-paying middle, low-paying employment endeavors. I was actually working the very same jobs that I'd been working before I graduated from college. Yes, it was like being back on the chain gang. But Jeffrey would like to finish the Reagan Rush saga. Shame on you, Chrissy Hind, for kissing the hind end of Rush Limbaugh. Wait a minute. Hind end. And allowing him to use your song, Ohio. No, it's My City Was Gone. It's not Ohio. It's My City Was Gone. For his theme song, after he called women feminazis and later referred to activist Sarah Flock as an Ivy League grad as a slut just for promoting the benefits of contraception products for young women. Keep in mind, Limbaugh flunked out of college. Chrissy Hind, your name suits you because you are an ass for supporting Rush Limbaugh. And let's recall that our dear friend, Bill Mr. Stress Miller, for whom the stress line, by the way, it's 844-843-4676, is named. Bill described on a couple of occasions how he came near to fisticuffs with Chrissy Hind for the just the utter nasty vulgarity that she engaged in talking about someone who was near and dear to Bill, Mr. Stress. This has been Joey's Journal for Wednesday, the 17th day of February. This is getting terribly confusing. Joey has the 18th. Hold the hell. No, it's the 17th. With Giraffery reading Brother Deacon Steve's text following the fall of Rush Limbaugh. The text read, yeah, Music Maestro, ding dong, the ditto head is dead. Ding dong, we flushed old Rush, and mega ding dongs to all you mega ditto heads. And that means there's a $25 challenge, the mega ding dong challenge, and it is on the table now. And it would go that'd get us down to $630, and that's tremendous. Oh, 620 actually. I was miscalculating because of Henry and David. Thank you. So that'd get us down to 620 if somebody will match that $25 challenge. Much appreciated. What's that, Brother Deacon Asa? Maybe Rush didn't die from lung cancer. Hear me out, Robin. We all know the fake news media wants to pull the wool over our eyes. What if Rush is not dead at all? What if the you-controlled fake news media is just making this all up to demoralize us real patriots? Just playing the devil's advocate here. Sincerely, Brother Deacon Asa, a.k.a. Genghis Khan. Yes, yes. And so, sometimes I can't. Fuck that, says David in South Carolina. Stan, I have local media reporting that we may disagree with Limbaugh's politics. However, we have to respect his talent. Blow me. Sorry, that was just me. And that's not directed at you, David, in South Carolina, Stan, but you know that. Stop, David says. Stop with the BS that we have to respect Limbaugh. Fuck that. He encouraged the fucking big lie and the insurrection. Yeah, remember, even up to his death, he was comparing the seditious
insurrectionist, treasonous scum with the Patriots, the Minutemen, at Lexington and Concord. He really, really did. It's a heck of a day, though. The helipad at Mar-a-Lago has been torn out. And earlier today, Trump Taj Mahal or whatever that scummy place, it was demolished. And apparently the hotel rooms there, the hell? God damn it, I hate it when that happens. The hotel rooms were all booked up in Atlantic City for the public viewing because everybody wanted to see it. Everybody wanted to celebrate the implosion of the shithole known as Trump Plaza. Yeah. Well, doggone it, I was hoping I was going to have the audio of that. As the saying goes, you can't always get what you want. But what a... Now, he died filthy fucking rich. Mm-hmm. He was pulling down $40, $50 million a year. And anybody who thinks, who would dare say that that hate doesn't sell in this country never paid any attention, not to what he said, but to the wealth of Flush Flimball. Yeah, you did send it to me, Ralph, but it didn't play. Wouldn't play. Yep, with talent on loan from God, and today God leaned down and whispered in his ear, "Margin call, motherfucker." Yeah. But God, there's that old verse, "Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof." And yet he added to the quantum of evil day in and day out. There was the day that he wondered aloud, "My friends, why is it that every wanted poster looks like Jesse Jackson?" Or the day that an African-American caller rang in and was brought on air, and I guess this was more of that bombastic comedy that the Washington Post was talking about, and shame on them. And shame on the New York Times, and shame on CNN. I mean, you know, Fox had a glowing review, of course. But shame on any media outlet that actually considers itself a legitimate purveyor of information for saying anything other than the fact that he was a toxic waste of life. That he was a draft-dodging little pissant son of privilege. I saw one obit that said, "He began as a rock and roll DJ in Cape Girardeau, Missouri," without mentioning the fact that the only reason he got that fucking job was because his daddy owned the station. Or some relative owned the station. He grew up privileged and white and wealthy. And that's why he could go to community college. It was one of the universities, maybe it was University of Missouri, Rolla, or something like that. Lasted about a semester, and then gone. And he could do all this because he had wealth behind him to carry him and keep him from ever actually having to earn a living. Because I don't care if you're working in Pittsburgh. The money was not that good. Working afternoon drive at Pixie or whatever it was. Wasn't that good. And then there's the longstanding rumor that he, Jeff Christie, had actually been busted in the Hill District of Pittsburgh and charged with pandering. Pandering being the term used back then when gay men would get busted soliciting sex with other gay men. Pandering. And you know, it really stuck because he spent the rest of his career, once he became America's truth detector, my friend, pandering to the right wing in this country. Yeah. Pandering is what he did best and worst. But an African-American caller got through to the program one day, and he said, "Call me back when you get that bone out of your nose." Or the, and all of this was on over the air, and somehow he managed, you know, subject to the FCC, and somehow he managed to keep, to continue broadcasting, even though he would, with his adipose gurgle, he would say, "My friends, do you know why Hillary Clinton doesn't wear short skirts? Because she doesn't want anyone to see her balls. Aha, 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 aha." He it was who told the nation that the body of Vince Foster had been found in an apartment secretly rented, my friends, by Hillary Clinton. And of course, years before, when his country needed him to go and serve in Vietnam, since he was clothed in white male privilege, he was able to get a deferment from the draft by pleading that he had a pallidal cyst. Now, a pallidal cyst, if you care to look it up, is a cyst that forms in or about the human anus and is filled with a combination of hair and pus. Well, there went dinner in the old Eastern Standard Time Zone. There's no verification as to whether he ever had it. It was sort of in one of those places where even the local draft board wasn't much interested in looking. "Oh, no, no, you're okay. Nah, Rusty, you come from good, not good, white Republican wealthy people. We'll take your word on your pallidal cyst there. We'll just send some black kid to get blown away in your place, Rush." Generally, with this kind of stuff, I try to follow what I call the thumper rule. I trust we've all seen Bambi with Thumper and Little Flower. And Thumper's when Thumper meets Flower, you know, Thumper's kind of an asshole. And he starts to, and his mother, "Thumper, what have I told you? If you can't say something nice, don't say nothing at all." But that doesn't apply to a man who spent the majority of his adult life trying to destroy every good thing that ever happened in America. So, no, we're just, you know, I come not
to praise Flush, but to bury him. Kim up in Minnesota reminds us, remember, he called Chelsea Clinton the White House dog. Absolutely true. And as Kim points out, good fucking riddance to 2020. The White House dog. I first heard him and sort of because even then I had the good sense to know when I was hearing garbage and filth. The receptionist at a law firm where I did my first clerkship would turn on the radio in the reception area of the firm during her lunch hour and listen to Rush. And I remember one day looking at her and saying, what the hell are you listening to? And she's, isn't he brilliant? No, he's a liar. He's an idiot. He's spewing unmitigated filth that it'll kill your brain. Because this was not any kind of conservative or Republican law firm. These were liberal Democrats, as a matter of fact. And I heard him every day that summer. I was like, dear God, this is disgusting. But in the late 80s and into the early 90s, he had a segment that he called his AIDS report. And in his AIDS report, he would celebrate the death of someone of note, someone of a who was popularly known. He would celebrate their death from AIDS. So is he entitled to be treated? And he's dead. He's dead anyway. I mean, it makes me want to believe in an afterlife, because I like to think of him down there with Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush and Oral Roberts and Lester Maddox and George Wallace. All the rest of those vile old white devils. I like to think of him getting the Little Nicky official reverse pineapple every day for all eternity. A sort of a pineapple groundhog day in hell. If there was any real justice, well, I was going to say we'd throw his body in a dumpster and throw in some gasoline and toss in a lit match. But that would contribute to climate change, and that would have made the toxic old fuck happy. So maybe in the midst of a brutal winter storm, the likes of which places like Texas have never seen, maybe the thing to do would be to take his rotten corpse, pilondial cyst and all, and cochlear implant that he got because he drove himself deaf with opioids. Just take him out somewhere into the West Texas desert and leave him for the birds to pick at until there's nothing left but bones. And then grind them into dust and put them in a hermetically sealed canister with a lot of weight and the ability to withstand a great deal of pressure. You can't drop him into the Mariana Trench either, Robin. Damn it! Shoot him into space? No, the aliens might find. Oh, my God, no. Suddenly we're in the plot to the first Star Trek movie, and he comes back like V'ger did, and only, my friends! And he spreads sickening Reagan-esque conservatism throughout the universe. No,
No, that won't work either. Billable Rick says, the polonial cyst has now been removed from the American body politic, but a lot of pus has been left behind for us to clean up. Yep, that Billable Rick doubling down on ruining dinner in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, because so often has his brunch been ruined or his late afternoon snack there in the Pacific Standard Time Zone. Steve in New York points out, White House dog, I actually saw him say that on his TV show. The worst part? The fucking audience laughed. Yeah, they did. In many ways, you got Father Coughlin in the early part of the 20th century. But in the late part of the latter decades of the 20th century, Rush Limbaugh truly taught America to hate. And America, or a portion of it, learned well. There was the moment, and of course you had to pay extra if you wanted to watch Rush do his program. But there was that day when he was offended by the fact that Michael J. Fox, who had Parkinson's disease, was arguing in favor of stem cell research to ease the suffering of that horrible, pernicious disease. And so Rush, on camera, did this shaking, jiggling thing, mocking not just Michael J. Fox, but everyone who suffered from Parkinson's disease. And as I thought about it earlier today, it struck me that that was a foreshadowing of what was to come. Because it wasn't that much later, really. It wasn't that many years. Before another bilious adipose gas bag would stand behind a microphone and jiggle and shake in mockery of another individual suffering from a disability. And because Rush Limbaugh had taught about a third of America to hate when Donald Trump did it, they just laughed and laughed. And I've got another memory. It is, and some aspects, there are things in my memory that I can remember with photographic precision. I know exactly where we were. Pretty sure we were in the old Ford Windstar van. Piece of crap. And had the kids with us. And the only thing on AM radio was Rush. So it had to be between the hours of noon and 3. And maybe we were going to the doctor or something. But we had all the kids with us. And if you're on the West Virginia Turnpike, which is also known as I-77, southbound, in Beckley, after you come off of US 19 through the toll booth, it was only a quarter then, it's 75 cents now, you merge onto onto the turnpike, and the first exit, the second exit you come to, is Harper Road. And you just take the ramp, and the ramp goes up the hill to a stoplight. And I was then what I am now. And I remember him doing a story that the only purpose of it, like any other story he ever did, was simply for the viciousness of it. And he was talking about some individual who had been assigned female at birth, AFAB, who was pursuing gender confirmation surgery. And as we rolled toward the stoplight at the top of the ramp at the intersection with Harper Road, where we were turning left, he said, "And my friends, she's having surgery to become a man. Can you believe it? Of course, there's a medical term for the surgery she's having. It's called an adidectomy. You get it? An adidectomy." Before 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, on the public airwaves, and it was probably carried on WWNR AM 620, where some years later I myself would return to radio. And I remember it so well because our children asked, "What's an adidectomy?" And bear in mind, this is the same cretin who, during the Clinton-Lewinsky scandal, had day in and day out queried, "My friends, whatever shall we tell the children? There are children now in schools in America who are having to learn about oral sex because of the President of the United States, my friends." He lived for cruelty. He lived for viciousness. He lived to hate. And yet, whether it's CNN or the New York Times or the LA Times or... Oh, let's see here. Let me just look at my notifications. BBC News, radio host Rush Limbaugh made provocative comments about race, feminism, and liberals. And the BBC, at least conveniently, provides some damning evidence. "Feminism was established so as to allow unattractive women access to the mainstream of society." This from a man with half his brain tied behind his back and proved it every day, with talent on loan from God. Feminazis. And when people began to point out, President Clinton, that the vicious hatred spreading across this country had contributed to what Timothy McVeigh and his fellow travelers did at Oklahoma City in 1995, he remarked, "Talk is not a crime, and talk is not the culprit here." Yeah. Because Clinton wasn't afraid to call him out. It was 2003 when he said, "The media has been very desirous that a black quarterback do well." This was when ESPN inexplicably hired him to do commentary on Monday Night Football. "There's a little hope invested in McNabb, and he got a lot of credit for the performance of this team that he didn't deserve." Because Negro.
And like I said, Sandra Fluke. What does it? What does that make her? It makes her a slut, right? It makes her a prostitute. That was 2012. And for that, he got the Presidential Medal of Freedom from Nitwit Nero. It goes on and on and on. NPR conservative radio host Rush Limbaugh has died at the age of 70. Let's see how long it takes NPR to refer to him as a broadcasting pioneer. Before right-wing conspiracy theorist Alex Jones, before Fox News, there was Limbaugh. His voice entertained millions of listeners. Well, yeah, teaching people to hate is entertainment, I guess. NPR actually interviewed him in 2007 where he said, "I always say my real purpose is to attract the largest audience I can and hold it for as long as I can so I can charge confiscatory advertising rates." He was an influencer before the age of social media, a hot take machine before people stopped pausing to think about what they were saying ahead of sending those words out into the world. Jesus Christ, NPR points out that there's even a Rush Limbaugh hometown tour in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. Rush Limbaugh, a talk radio host who became the voice of American conservatism, has died at age 70 after a battle with cancer. That from the Associated Press. Rush Limbaugh, influential right-wing talk radio host, dies aged 70. That from The Guardian. Goes on and on. L.A. Times, New York Times, Washington Post. It's absolutely disgusting. But that's what hate can get you in America today. We don't do that here. Malloy doesn't do it. Rick Smith doesn't do it. Dr. Bill doesn't do it. But there's a third of the country that loves it, that eats it up. The approval ratings for Joe Biden are out. And 62% of the American people sincerely approve of the job he's doing. 33% do not. That, of course, is the same 33% that worshipped every toxic grunt that came out of Nitwit Nero's mouth and at one point in time probably hung on every bilious mouth fart that emerged from flush phlegm balls, the oxymoron, the junkie.
My friends, I hurt my neck playing golf one day, and my doctor gave me a prescription for OxyContin, which I took, and it relieved the pain, and I continued to take.
And by the time he was busted for doctor shopping, and remember, don't forget this part, kids. He also took a vacation to the Dominican Republic with a bottle of Viagra in someone else's name, by prescription, when there were no women in the group, and the Dominican Republic
was well known as a place you could go near to America and have sex with little boys. Mm-hmm. And when he was charged with doctor shopping, the ACLU, whom he had vilified, ran to his defense to save him from having to go to prison like other people not quite as pale as him had done. That was a dark day for the American Civil Liberties Union and continues to poison their history. Brother Deacon Asa, also known as Genghis Khan, says, has Rush been called a national treasure on lefty radio yet? I'm asking for a Portland friend. No, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was. You've tuned into the wrong program if you're waiting for that. Those polandial cysts, Jeremy in Vermont says, I had one of the very same cysts as Rush. They suck. But it wouldn't have stopped him from shooting at people less white than his massive self. That being said, I wouldn't wish one on another human being. The removal's horrifying and almost more painful and not guaranteed. Well, see, here's the difference between you and Rush, Jeremy. You actually had one. Bone spurs are no fun either, if you actually have one, as opposed to having your daddy compel a doctor who rented space from him write a letter saying you did have one to keep your rotten-ass son out of Vietnam and letting some dark-skinned person go and die instead. Yeah. Yeah. What's that, Arthur? Come on, Robin. You look at Rush and naturally you think, let's see what he has to say about football. He's very athletic and attractive if you have enough cataracts. That's quality, Arthur. Quality indeed. As for what to do with his mortal remains, I like this a lot. Cowbell for Sparky. Drop him in the same place they dumped Bin Laden. And with less respect. As for him making fun of disabled people, yeah. Billable Rick points out that's exactly what he did, what Trump did during his 2016 campaign. Where do you think he learned it? Because it didn't just happen on the radio. There was video of it all over the country. And don't think for a minute that Nitwit Nero didn't know that if the ditto heads ate it up, that the maggots would too, because they were the same people, for God's sakes. And it goes on and on. And he may be dead, but his progeny go on in his name after him. I was thinking in particular about Kaylee Maganini. Remember her? After Joe Biden's town hall yesterday, Kaylee Maganini, and remember, this is prayer meeting Wednesday, so we can talk about this sort of thing. She's a Christian. She never shows up with her little cross around her neck. And at 12:05 this morning on Twitter, she said, signing off with a final notable quote from Joe Biden during his town hall this evening. Everyone knows I love kids better than people. And she posted the emoji. They're a sick lot, these Republicans. And whether it's Kaylee Maganini or the draft-dodging son of a Klansman, Donald Trump, or the Beckerhead or O'Reilly
or the Hannity job, or even Alex Jones, or Laura Ingram, or Fucker Carlson, Cucky Tucky. They all learned at the stinking feet of the master. That's a great line. Otto sharing it in the chat room. God gives up Rush Limbaugh for Lent. And there was even a quote from the current Mrs. Limbaugh, so I suppose they finally found the key to the door and let her out of the pit. I can make your life a living hell. It puts the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again. And year after year after year, they paid him more and more and more to hate. And I don't care what any of these for-profit media outlets write. He was no broadcast pioneer. Larry King was a broadcast pioneer. Oddly enough, Flush Flimball got his start in Sacramento subbing for Morton Downey. And then eclipsed and surpassed him, because even Morton Downey had a shred of human dignity. Might have been only a shred, but he, by God, had it. And so now, you got to wonder who's going to get that noon to three slot, because, baby, that is coveted. And it remains to be seen. As Agnes just pointed out to me, take comfort. Rush and Epstein, down in hell, will be chatting over Trump's legal indictment, coming soon to a computer near you. Yes, dear. Yes, they will. At least in the Horn chat room, the early betting has Laura Ingram taking the coveted noon to three slot. That would be Frau Ingram. Jesus. Like I said, I come not to praise Rush Limbaugh, but to bury him. Matt in San Francisco says, I tuned in late. Is he dead? Yes, he is. Can't speak ill of the dead, but I can celebrate. Oh, God, if there was a parade through the Castro District tonight in San Francisco, I would not be at all. I would be neither surprised nor upset. Because Flush Flimball hated no one so much as he hated the gay community. Is he the one who coined the phrase, big gay? And eventually he did start hemorrhaging listeners after the Sandra Fluck controversy. That was 2012. But all the vile hatred that he had pumped out until then without a single consequence, because, my friends, I have ratings. And the fact that he could say anything at all and stay on the air, any hateful thing he wanted, well, it presaged what was going to happen to the United States of America. That a time had come when we had no means of checking hate speech in this country. When there was going to be a market for it with someone, and as long as there was a market,
there would be money and there would therefore be a program. And that, too, was an ill wind blowing through the country of a coming time when, if a person was just hateful enough to engage a third of the electorate, that politician could survive any vulgar, vile, hateful thing that he said. And brag about it.
I could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and never lose a vote.
And so here we are. 1 month and 11 days after an insurrectionist attack on the capital of the United States of America, praised by the dead man and egged on by the politician who got to say anything. Because, of course, it was so much fun listening to him hate people. It played to the ids of an aggrieved white America. Yeah. Matt in San Francisco says, driving over the Golden Gate Bridge right now, the bridge looks even brighter now. Well, the day's a little better. And even though it's brutal in so many parts of the country, we are at least a minimally better country now. Because there's one less person inciting America to hate. Stephen, New York. Rush Limbaugh's casket. Just saw this on Facebook. I suppose an open casket plumbed in like a urinal would be useful. Oh, yeah. Hey. I'm on a diuretic medication. Not saying, just saying. Albert pointing out, when he gets up to the pearly gates, he'll be told, you took God's name in vain daily for years, so we're sending you to hell. Scott in San Diego, who gets Rush's noon to three slot? Industry publications a month or two ago suggested Trump might.
Ooh.
And hey, all they got to do is move all his broadcast crap from that. It probably wouldn't be a 10-mile drive. It moved the Southern Command to Mara Sleezo. Damn, Scott. I mean, $50 million a year. And the orangutan would take that in a minute, because, of course, he's brokered in the Ten Commandments and poor as Job's turkey. I can't believe that I've just spent an hour and 13 minutes going over the lowlights of a low life. Because the fact of the matter is it has a sort of a celebratory vibe to it, but not so much when you realize how much of what he started still remains. And it's a big dollar. The other thing I thought of when the news broke was, of course, the late great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him. He's been gone from us for so very long. And he was having a hoot about the defeat of George H.W. Bush by Bill Clinton this goes back to 1993, I guess. I think Bill Hicks would be dead by 1995. But there's a reference. There's a reference to Flesh Limbaugh in this thing. Stand by. Ah, darn it. I just had the funnest phone call. It was a wrong number, but it was like, who is this? It's Carly. Are you kidding me? Carly, I don't know who you are. Shut the fuck up, Trevor. I was trying to get that to air. Oh, my God. Huh, too bad. That could have been fun. If only I had Bo Snerdly here, we would have gotten that on the air really quickly. But no, Bill Hicks, there's a Limbaugh reference in this bit. You've heard it on this program before, and I just love it so much that it begs playing. Wait a minute. Go from the beginning.
Man, I'm over in fucking England, and Bush fucking loses.
93.
Must have been a secret. It must have been a Secret Service plot to keep me out of the country the night he lost. Protect Bush, you know, his eardrums from shattering when I shrieked with fucking laughter. He's dead, it's dead, the Republican beast is fucking dead. 12 years of that rampaging Republican fucking elephant beast finally brought to its knees. Yes, you're dead, you fucker, you fuck, you're dead. We hate you, now do you know it? Now do you feel it? Feel the fucking hate, feel it, call off your dogs. Call your little Vietnamese pot-bellied Rush Limbaugh back to your fold, you demon fuck. Bring Pat Buchanan back. Call him back, you're lost. Finally, the Republican beast elephant brought to its fucking knees. Because I feel like me and my friends and all the artists in the fucking country were like little pygmy tribes shooting darts at that elephant for 12 years. And finally, we do our little pygmy dance.
God, he was brilliant, and it was worth it for the Flesh Limbaugh reference. Oh, and in that same time frame, another right wing asshole was working the hustings, as it were. Or the circuit, the right-wing hate circuit. Only, unlike Flesh Limbaugh, this asshole was using the 501c3 tax-exempt laws to run his gig. And it was something called the Center for Media Fairness. And you'd see him on radio programs, what have you, from time to time. See him on radio programs? Really, Robin? No, you'd see him on TV shows. You'd hear him on the radio. And his name was L. Brent Bozo. I mean, Bozell. And he was a real prick. He was one of the ones that was following in Flush's footsteps and preaching the pernicious, mendacious gospel that somehow the media were all in the tank for the liberals, my friends. And as a consequence, he got a lot of exposure, and his little tax-free Dodge apparently was bringing in money hand over fist. And somewhere along the way, I guess, a woman came along who was willing to fuck L. Brent Bozo. And the aforementioned fucking probably took place some 40-plus years ago. So, late 70s, early 80s. And they produced a thing called L. Brent Bozo, Bozell the Fourth. Well, it turns out that L. Brent Bozo, Bozell the Fourth, couldn't quite live up to Daddy's reputation, or maybe he was trying a little too hard. And L. Brent Bozo the Third, Bozell, is referred to again in the for-profit media as a conservative activist or a conservative media critic. When in fact he was just just another right-wing piece of garbage hate monger. But turns out there's plenty of documentary evidence in the form of video and photography of L. Brent Bozo the Fourth, scion of the Bozo clan, Bozell. Where? Why, inside the Capitol during the attack thereon. The FBI's affidavit was unsealed yesterday. And the special agent for the FBI says that L. Brent Bozo, Bozell the Fourth, can be seen in footage inside the Capitol during the attack of January the 6th, and that he was one of the ones who desecrated, there's that complicated word we were talking about a couple of nights ago, actually was on the floor of the Senate of the United States. And because he's the son of a conservative media critic activist, it was L. Brent Bozo, Bozell the Fourth, who knew to go up and find one of the cameras and pointed it toward the ground as the attackers began to flood into the Senate chamber. By pointing the camera to the ground, the camera was unable to record protesters entering the main floor of the U.S. Senate chamber. So he's facing charges of disorderly conduct, and he's charged with knowingly entering or remaining in a restricted building or grounds. He's charged with obstructing an official proceeding. And hopefully he will do hard time. Of course, back on January 6th, his daddy, I don't know if daddy knew that Sonny Boy was there, but his daddy said,
this is an explosion of pent-up outrage from middle America.
And of course, when somebody like Bozo the Clan, and that's a cowbell for Larry in the chat room, says middle America, what he means is ignorant, white, racist, bigoted
America. Three individuals, three separate people ratted out L. Brent Bozo IV. And they identified him because Stupid wore a really unique sweatshirt that bore in large, easily identifiable form the logo of the, and there's a joke in here somewhere, Hershey Christian Academy of Hershey, Pennsylvania. They describe themselves as a small Christ-centered school, and they teach students from pre-K through the 10th grade. And so it turns out that L. Brent Bozell IV had sent his kids to Hershey Christian Academy and had, in fact, been the former girls' basketball coach there. He was further ratted out to the FBI as having the nickname Zeeker. Rhymes with, I don't know, Tweaker. Meanwhile, the fine folks at Hershey Christian Academy were engaged in serious damage control, pleading, please understand that the person depicted in this photograph, these photographs, is not a board member, employee, or representative of Hershey Christian Academy anymore, because he had been the girls' basketball coach. And they issued another statement where they said, Hershey Christian Academy does not condone the unacceptable behavior in footage from January 6th. And then, of course, they pogo-sticked up onto the cross. Mm-hmm. Parents and teachers, unfortunately, have been forced to endure many terrorizing and threatening emails and harassing calls, which have brought fear into our community and caused many parents to opt for virtual learning rather than in-person learning. In a pandemic, really? You expect that? You expect anybody to believe that? Hershey Christian Academy? And, of course, remember that the origins of these academies begins in Brown versus Board of Education, when the Supreme Court declared that separate but equal was no longer acceptable, and white parents all over America, primarily the South, but all over America, and remember, Hershey is in that part of Pennsylvania that is, you know, Pennsylvania is Pittsburgh in the West and Philly in the East, and you know, Alabama in the middle, so it kind of fits. And they put together these tax dodges that they called Christian academies, charged whopping big tuitions, you know, to make sure that the little white children didn't have to go to school with the little black children. Unfortunately, no one from the Media Research Center, run by L. Brent Bozo III, L. Brent Bozo the Turd, couldn't be found for comment. On the other hand, however, even as the indictment was being unsealed against L. Brent Bozo IV, L. Brent Bozo the Turd was having a fit on Twitter. Once again, the New York Times is at the center of a massive misinformation campaign, and once again, it turns out their mistake benefits the left. What he was complaining about, and it was a post from fucking Newsbusters, which is a garbage site, was that the New York Times updated and corrected an article on the murder of Officer Brian Sicknick. The story was from yesterday. Newsbusters
New information has emerged regarding the death of the Capitol Police officer Brian Sicknick that questions the initial cause of his death provided by officials close to the Capitol Police. And so the Newsbusters takes that to mean that he wasn't really bludgeoned to death with a fire extinguisher by homicidal maniacs supporting Nitwit Nero. Yeah, hell of a thing, that. So maybe, who knows? It sounds like L. Brent Bozo is a little bit worried about where Sonny Boy might have been. And that he might be worried about Sonny Boy being ultimately charged with something like, oh, I don't know, felony murder? Yeah. So here we are. We are halfway through this prayer meeting Wednesday that turned into a sort of anti-eulogy for Flush Flimball. And unlike Rush, who was paid $50 million a year, we run this program on very little, frankly. As little as we possibly can and keep the program going. We got $680 to raise. And there is, in fact, a $25 challenge on the table, courtesy of Joey and Giraffe. And that'd get us down to 620. I'm sorry, 670. That'd get us down to 620. And it would be great if we could do that. If we could get all the way down to $600, it would mean that this little program was fully funded for Monday. Past, not next, past. And so if anybody would like to respond to that challenge and maybe somebody else throw in another $20, we'll at least have Monday finished. Thank you. Thank you very kindly if you choose so to do. Arthur says, I agree with Randy Rhodes. We need domestic terrorism laws. Trespassing for attacking the Capitol, really? Yeah. But the other thing to remember about Flush is that what you have with him is, of course, the perfect example of the fetishization of the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. And also the poster child for deregulation of the public airwaves, which, of course, was accomplished under Reagan. And then the consolidation of media via the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which Bill Clinton signed so that he wouldn't have to be humiliated by having himself perhaps overridden had he vetoed it. He signed it thinking that maybe he could make the Republicans like him. They rewarded him by impeaching him. And by the way, Republican insiders are confirming what I've been saying for years, frankly, that if, in fact, a Democratic president is in office when the Republicans take over the House, they will impeach that Republican president for any damn thing they can think of. And I've been talking about it recently in the context of Jim Shorts Jordan, the guy who looked the other way while boys were being raped on his watch at The Ohio State University. He wants to be chairman of House Judiciary so he can impeach Joe Biden in sometime like 2023. Yeah. Hopefully we're smart enough not to let up and not to get a big sad because we haven't gotten a pony yet, or not throw a hissy over this policy or that policy, understanding that whatever happens in this administration is 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,
done at all. We can't do it with Republican control of either House of Congress. Just saying. Hey, thanks a lot. Thank you to Jeremy in Vermont. We got 15 more bucks to go on Joey and Giraffe's challenge, then 20 bucks to go to get money Monday fully funded. So thank you, Jeremy. Thank you. Note from Mighty Mouse.
I was so dismayed in 2012 that Sandra Fluck didn't sue him, and every radio station that spread his clear libel to their audience. But she didn't, for reasons understandable. Dominion suits may ultimately do some real damage to the Ministry of Truth domain. Never too late for justice. So let's run over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Robin.
How are you?
I'm tired. I've been dancing since I heard the news.
when I saw the news, it reminded me of that one old joke about the guy who goes by the newsstand every day. And he buys a newspaper. Looks above the fold, looks below the fold, sets the newspaper down, walks away. This goes on for a while, and finally the newsstand operator says, hey, you pay me for a newspaper every day. Then you just read the front page, and you put it back. But why don't you take it? No, I'm just checking the obituaries, the guy says. The obituaries, they're not on the front page. They're back in it. No, the bastard I'm looking for is going to be on the front page, the guy says. This was one of those moments.
Yeah, it's weird. I guess the universe overheard us last night, because I figured, if the guy's pulling down $45, $50 million a year, you can bet your sweet patoot that he can afford the A number one primo health care in the known universe, okay? So I just figured he would linger. And I thought it would be like the start of a running bit. We'll check the headlines. Is he dead yet? No. Well, and then go on with whatever today's topic is. And I'm not complaining, but I really did think the fucker would linger a little bit, to give us room to play, I'm sorry. I'm sorry when anybody dies, except today. I'm kind of relieved. And I think back to the original Star Wars movie, where I believe Obi-Wan Kenobi notes a disturbance in the Force. Well, today we have the exact opposite of that. What would that be called? Can we get our brains working, Horn family, and come up with a descriptive phrase that's the opposite of a disturbance in the Force? And somebody noted that the Bay Bridge at San Francisco never looked lovelier. I looked out the window today, out the front door.
That was Matt.
And saw that the sky is bluer, the air is purer, the birds are singing more sweetly, and I proved today, if not it's set in stone, this white man cannot dance, okay? But I hopped around a little bit, between cups of coffee. That's the news you want to wake up to, as that fat bastard is dead, Jesus. And if you're looking for a pretty well done obituary for the old bastard, the New York Times obituary is pretty good. It relates the news, as journalism is supposed to do, but it leaves out very few details, sordid details, of the man's life and times and career. So check
that
out.
Does it talk about him being a broadcast pioneer?
I don't know that they use those exact words. That was kind of a mandatory first paragraph thing. Because you got to look at the context. In the 1980s, AM radio had pretty much lost the listening war in terms of music. And station owners were scrambling to find something to put on.
It was a wasteland.
Because of the fidelity issue. You can't tell me that One Toke Over the Line by Brewer and Shipley sounds better. Well, maybe that does sound better on AM than it does on FM. But FM offers you your stereo and your fidelity and your clear, static-free reception, whereas AM is like, you know, a thundercloud's 40 miles away, and it statics up your AM listening experience.
And meanwhile, the FCC had screwed up because they had AM stereo for years, but couldn't come up with a standard, a uniform standard to make it ubiquitous.
Yeah.
Same thing with FM. Same thing with FM quad.
I remember FM quad.
I don't. I never got to hear it. It would have been amazing.
Well, as I recall, the radio station in Washington, D.C., the FM station at 90.1, today is C-SPAN radio. But back in my Wonder Bread years, it was the Georgetown University station for which I volunteered to do counterculture programming, WGTB in Georgetown. And they had equipment or something. So their transmitter was modified in such a way that somehow or another they could, when they played a quadraphonic LP, it sounded even better than FM stereo. I don't know how they did it because I was stoned half the time back in that era. But, you know, there was some way to get it across on the airwaves. And I don't know whether you needed a special receiver or they needed special transmitting equipment or just what the deal was. Somebody can look it up. But I'm just
But we're way into the weeds now.
I'm sorry that we didn't have an opportunity to do for a couple of weeks or months. Is the fat bastard dead yet? No. Okay. Well, what's happening?
Well, we've kind of been doing that.
Yeah, I know, but I
not enough to suit you, Scott. Is that what you're saying? Not enough to suit you?
Hell no. There's, you know, hell wouldn't even have the motherfucker. They've had to build another eternal punishment.
Oh, I love the idea of dumping him. I love Sparky's idea of dumping him where they dumped dumped Bin Laden. That was a beautiful thing.
You hate those fish. You No, but yes, that was good. I wish I'd have thought of it.
But what you said about AM radio is true. And the other part of the grift here is that he came up with this notion, and I don't know that he invented it. I don't think he did, but he capitalized on it. And that was, if you take my program and run my ads, I will leave local avails in my program for you to run during my show. And early on, that was supposed to be an inducement because, you know, an AM radio program director loves nothing more than something he can play without paying money.
Yeah.
And that he could sell ads in even. And so that's what made him. It wasn't so much the content. It was the fact that it was fucking free.
Yeah. Well, no, it wasn't. Initially, it may have been. In other words, the only thing that the local station was required to do was to have a space on which the national spots would run. And in return, they'd get the program and they'd get the local availabilities during the course of the hour.
Right. But then if you were some big, 50,000 watt blowtorch, then they began sending you a bill. And so by the time I'm on the air at WWNR in Beckley, those guys were actually writing a check to Rush Limbaugh for the privilege of running his program.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to buy the show.
In the fifth smallest radio market in America.
Well, and I'm sure it was a sliding scale.
Yeah, it was. It would have to have been. Based upon market size, market share. And eventually, because they were, in fact, cheapskates, they quit carrying him. And put something else that had come along for free in the slot.
At what point did the fairness doctrine go away? Because, see, that's the other thing that allowed him to be the success that
The fairness doctrine goes away, I think, in the first term of Reagan.
Okay, well, there you go.
I mean, it's during Reagan. I think it was the first term.
Up until that fairness doctrine was put away, any broadcaster who had a person on as a guest or even a commentator, if they gave a particular viewpoint on a particular topic, the station was obliged, as a condition of its continued operation and licensure to whoever owned the station, to offer, it wasn't equal time exactly, it was an opportunity for someone with an opposing viewpoint to put that on the public airwaves. Well, when that went away, it was like Katie bar the fucking door. You know, you could get up there and say whatever the fuck you wanted, and he did, for fuck's sake, for, you know. And when there are no rules, it's easy to be a success. Wouldn't you agree? I mean,
right. And what makes it even easier, Scott, is if you are competing on a battlefield that has no opposing army on it, you win.
Yeah. Because, and it's funny that he died and that we're talking about this, because I was watching an old YouTube video, an interview with Bill Maher, of all people, talking about the difference between the mindset of conservatives and progressives. Conservatives march in lockstep. It's like the mind. You remember those commercials, The Mind of Minolta? Well, the mind of the conservative is
a hive mind.
Standardized.
It's a hive mind.
It's not exactly.
They preach rugged individualism, but they act collectively.
Bingo.
This goes back to something Van Jones said that I've talked about before a long, long time ago now. Back before he lost the vast majority of his credibility, he said Republicans talk about individuality and rugged individualism, but they act collectively. Liberals talk about collectivity, but they act individually.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's to get liberals to agree on the finer points of certain things.
Oh fuck, we can't agree. No. The liberals can't agree what goes on a pizza. And what do you mean pizza? Do you have any idea how many yeah. different cultures suffer to make a pizza?
Yeah, do you mean flatbread? Or do you mean, you know, throw the dough?
I have a gluten allergy.
And really, when
I'm not making fun of gluten allergies.
I know. When you look at the radio landscape, even right now as we speak, the liberal progressive radio outposts are few and far between, even today. Because we're as much as we love this program, we don't need you or another liberal voice to tell us what to think. We already have a rough idea of what's right and decent and honorable and workable. We're all on the same page, even though the page is like that four translation Bible that I used to have. You have the King James in this column, and you got the NIV, New International Version, in this column, and, you know, two more on the other two columns. You know, we're pretty much on the same page, even though we're not speaking in unison. It's, you know, it's not like the Norman Aberschnackel choir singing out our, you know, our lovely liturgy in unison and beautiful.
Yes, a mighty God is our Dicky Dragon, right? By the way, we've got a little bit of background here. Arnold in PA says it wasn't free; he was paid to be on their air, and says Rick Smith knows it's like $50 an hour, I think, you know, for a small market, and so that'd be $150 a day. That would be. Ciphering. But the other part of it is that nobody ever mentions is that he was not a sensation from jump. In fact, there were a bunch of right-wing think tanks and et cetera who I have read elsewhere quietly went about the business of financing him and bankrolling him without ever wanting their names mentioned. They they didn't care about being promoted. They just wanted to get their message out, which our side to this day, after 40 fucking years of this garbage, still hasn't figured out. And by the way, Laborman, our buddy Gary, said the Fairness Doctrine went away in 87. Reagan vetoed the budget continuing resolution with the renewal of the Fairness Doctrine and told the Dems to remove the Fairness Doctrine renewal, and he'd sign the continuing resolution. So that's 1987, shortly after Rush was born on air. And of course, Flavio points out, meanwhile, Henry Kissinger still breathes. Can you imagine the paroxysm of glowing tributes that will... Yeah, that's just sickening to think about. Can you imagine the paroxysm of glowing tributes that will ensue when that genocidal pig finally pops off? When that motherfucker goes, I'm tying a Homeric one on and setting off bottle rockets within the city limits. I don't care. Find me. Arrest me. And I get the sentiment. Well, it's kind of like what I've said about when a certain person goes to their long home. You won't have to hear it on the news. You'll just see a headline out of West Virginia. Naked trans woman seen running, dancing, and singing down the street. and everybody will know that a certain person has gone on to his long orange home. By the way, because tech stuff. Silent R. Lamar, Quadratic Radio. If you had the right stereo system, most of the albums in the 60s through 80s, some artists used it, like the Beatles through Funkadelic. It was fun hearing four different things out of four different speakers. Oh, hell yeah! Recorded quadraphonically as opposed to stereophonically. But then it was even more complicated because they couldn't get the manufacturers to agree on a standard. And it's that way anytime you're dealing with market economics, free market economics, not free to you, motherfucker, capitalism, way back when the catalytic converter was coming along, there were competing systems there. If I recall correctly, Chrysler had come up with a means of reducing emissions just by virtue of how the computer controlled the burning of the fuel. And GM came up with the catalytic converter. And the catalytic converter won because General Motors.
Aren't those things jammed with platinum pellets or some rare metal?
And then every redneck in America hollowed the damn thing out.
Yeah.
Because they ain't gonna take away my smog. That's my freedom. I like the smell of it.
Believe it or not, even with his storied career, Limbaugh did have a few bad moments, and you can probably still find it on YouTube. Do you remember Pat Sajak, the guy on Wheel of Fortune?
Oh yeah.
Okay, before Letterman, CBS, in a vain attempt to grab viewers up against The Tonight Show, put on a late-night show hosted by Pat Sajak. Jesus Christ. Well, one night, Pat was sick or something, and he invited Rush Limbaugh to guest host for him, and it was not pretty. You may even be able, and it may even come across with the audio. The audience literally hooted him out of the studio.
They had
to clear the fucking audience in the taping.
Right, because he tried to play his racist shtick in front of a live studio audience that wasn't having it.
Yeah, and
I've seen that clip. I didn't realize it was Pat Sajak, but yeah.
Yeah, he was filling in for old Pat.
Yeah, and Billable Rick says, AM radio, Rush had a whiny, nasally voice suitable for listening only on AM radio. Hey, he did. And that's the thing. He did not have what, in the biz, is referred to, and I've had it used with regard to me, as a set of pipes. He didn't have it. I mean, that's why when I do my Rush impression, my friends, it was annoying as shit.
Yeah.
And yet, once again, he was a trailblazer in that regard. I'll give it to him, because he opened the door for all manner of people who had shit for radio voices.
Yeah.
You don't have Mark Levin, who makes, you know, who makes Gilbert Gottfried sound like Harry Von Zell, for Christ's sakes.
There's nowhere else.
And see, he got his start, his shtick, as my friends, the lawyer for the program here at the EIB, F. Lee Levin. It's Mark Levin.
I never knew that. I never listened to Limbaugh.
Jesus Christ, listening to Mark Levin's like listening to weasels fuck.
Oh, and my brother, you know, loves Levin. Even used to send me the links to listen to his daily program in case I missed it that day.
In case I missed it that day. Dear brother. Wait, do I need to get out the Civil War music? Hold on, wait a minute. Oh no, this is a bit. Stand by.
All right.
This is going to take a second. We're going to do this on the fly. It's going to be totally ad-libbed. Here we go. We'll have to live through the ad first, of course, but that's okay. We can vamp past it. We're pros. Yeah, here we go. Dear brother, as I sit here on my sofa, the day of battling tax and spend liberals having finally passed, I wonder, dear brother, if you happen to listen to today's installment from that man with the voice made for print. I, of course, dear brother, refer to Mark Levin. For today, he was especially annoying. I mean, brilliant. Okay, that's enough of that, but we get the idea.
Yeah, and he even one Christmas or birthday or something, he sent me a couple of books. And I promised I would read them both, and I'll fess up. I did read the first one, but I swear to Christ, the other one is serving a useful purpose. There's this table with one leg that's not quite long enough that wobbles. And the book, I slipped that volume right in that dead space of that table leg, and that thing is rock solid. Rock solid, I'm telling you, Robin. But you mentioned another name from the past. No, not Harry Von Zell. You mentioned Morton Downey Jr. The story on that was, Morton Downey Jr. held the spot on the Sacramento radio station that Limbaugh inherited, and Limbaugh only inherited it when Morton Downey Jr. was taken to WOR-TV, believe it was, in New York, to get a syndicated TV show, and hilarity did not ensue. And that's when they slipped Rush into that.
He went off to New York, and he would do 3 hours for free for the station that was giving him time, and then he would do the 3 hours of his program. And
yeah,
hollowed
W-A-B-C.
as to hollowed out catalytic converters, Tom and Sonny San Rafael, and this is just one of those weird little coincidences. I think it was on Friday on the Front Porch Past. Maybe it was. That Sparky was talking about having to go get his car smogged. And I said, what in the sweet name of all that's was getting your car smogged? And he explained it was the emissions check. And so, by coincidence, I mentioned hollowed-out catalytic converters. Tom writes in from sunny San Rafael and says, that's why we have smog checks every 2 years. They use platinum and palladium for the catalyst and thus are a prime target for midnight thieves. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll be darned. How's about that? Billable Rick wants to know, weasel fucking, do they sound anything like cats fucking? It's worse, Billable Rick. You know, if I'm comparing Mark Levin's voice to, or Rush's voice to weasels fucking, it's worse than cats fucking.
Yeah, this is like your 3-year-old tuning his bagpipes, you know, a little musical prodigy, a little Timmy and his kid-sized bagpipes, and you got to tune them fuckers. I want to tell you, how do you even know they're out of tune?
That reminds me of that great joke of the guy who walks into the bar with an octopus, a very talented octopus, and he begins to bet the bartender, I bet my octopus can play that guitar over there. And the octopus plays the guitar, the guy gets a beer, it's the piano, then it's the drums, and it's the bass, and there's a set of bagpipes sitting there. He says, yeah, same bet again, a beer if my octopus plays those bagpipes. Bartender says, sure. And the octopus just sits there. Previously, the octopus is, you know, just octoped over and started playing, but the octopus goes over to the bagpipes and looks around and lifts it and touches it. And the guy looks at the octopus and says, well, go ahead, play it. The octopus says, play it. If I can get its pajamas off, I'm going to fuck it. Octopus with the horn, with the pipes. When you have to explain it, they're not nearly as funny.
Well, yeah, I know. I just there's a certain lightness. I'm serious when I say this. That knowing this person has shuffled off this mortal coil, considering all the damage he did. And see, I've always said that a high amount of responsibility should go with a 3-hour national, even worldwide platform, because he was carried on.
No, God knows, I take that responsibility very seriously.
Well, yeah, you want to, after your 3 hours, you would hope that the listeners and the planet was somewhat better, even marginally, you know, after the 3 hours of this program than it was before the program began. Well, apparently Rush didn't get the fucking memo or deliberately ignored
it. No. When he was interviewed by NPR, he said he frankly didn't care, that his only goal was making a shit ton of money by any means necessary.
Well, and I've heard that quote before. I think that's his standard shtick. You know, I think it was in his book. I'm sure it was in his book. And I'm sure it was in every interview, because the guy basically, I mean, one of the features that I don't think the New York Times article mentions, and they mentioned a lot of the features of his show. Do you remember his caller abortions?
No.
Do you remember those? A caller would come in and try to talk some sense to him, and Rush would cue the engineer, and you hear the sound of a vacuum cleaner. And then after the noise was over, the caller would be gone. And that was a caller abortion. Now, is that responsible broadcasting? Or is that just crazy, you know, manifest lunacy on our fucking airwaves?
Well, it's the same point I'm making with the addictomy joke.
Addictomy, yes. Well,
because, you know, there's nothing funnier to a conservative than really, really difficult plastic surgery to make a human being able to better tolerate life on this planet. Boy, that's a real knee slap. I don't care who you are. That's funny.
Marge, did you hear what he said?
Yeah, that's all. Emery and Marvelline sitting around in matching Barca loungers listening to Rush. I still don't understand why they took him off the TV. He was good.
And I sincerely hope that it does not come to pass. that slot is filled by you-know-who. I swear to you, a month or two ago...
Now, hold the hell on. You-know-who has a very specific term of art meaning on this network. And I don't think it's gonna.
Well, wait a minute. I missed that memo.
Well, but that's okay. People know who you-know-who is, and, you know...
Well, I'm talking about the most recent person who lived at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah, well, no, that's not who you know who means. In that case, you just say COVID, Caligula, okay, or Nitwit Nero, or the orangutan, or the demented circus peanut.
Old numbnuts.
Old numbnuts.
But anyway, they're numbnuts.
No nuts. You take that. You take that fucking finasteride as long as he has. Shit, they're not the size of fucking BBs.
Anyway, the one of the radio journals that I get an email from every day, you know, the industry insider poop, as it were, said at least 6 weeks ago that there was talk of Trump getting that slot once Rush went on to
whatever. And now that he doesn't have Twitter or Facebook or anything?
It would be a nightmare.
And no way to run him off? Because if they wouldn't poll Rush Limbaugh for calling a young woman a slut, shit. I mean, that's made for him.
And a built-in audience. Think of it. The best that Rush was ever able to get was like 12 to 15 million.
Oh, I'm sure that premier radio networks are salivating at the prospect. The only problem they run into is this notion that he has, or has said he has, that he's going to run again.
Well, Reagan ran. Think about it. You remember the Mutual Broadcasting System?
Be-doop.
Your network for news and sports? Be-doop. That's on Larry King's tombstone. Be-doop. Right under his name, date of birth, date of death.
Be-doop.
And then be-doop. And the only people who know what that means are, well, folks like us. Be-doop. But anyway, the Reagan had a five-minute...
Just so people... That was the stop tone that Mutual had.
Yes. Reagan, in the 70s, after he was out of office as governor of California, he had a five-minute daily commentary program on the Mutual Radio Network, the Mutual Broadcasting System, that went out to hundreds of stations.
But that was after he was out of office and not running again.
The only reason he dropped it... Well, he
dropped it. He had to drop it when he ran, Scott. That's the whole point.
Yes, yes.
And but so, the, and so, some... so the, actually, as Ed, I'll never tune in. Oh, come on, we'll all tune in. No, I won't. The only way you could really commit to it is if he said he wasn't going to run. And if only he had been convicted in the Senate, he would have been forbidden to run, and they probably would have snatched him right up.
Yeah, because also he would have to, never mind sick days, he would have to, former President Trump will not be on today, filling in as Laura Ingraham. The president has another court
day. No. Filling in is Stephen Miller.
Oh, God. Well, and his voice...
Oh, and let me interrupt just for a second. I've got a little bit of good news. Namely, we've still got $15 to go on Joey and Giraffe's challenge. But after that, if we can meet that $15, an anonymous friend has put forward a When Billionaires Choose You Lose challenge of $50, and that'll knock us down another $100, get us funded for Monday and funded for a little bit of yesterday. So that would be fan-freaking-tastic, and thanks to our anonymous friend. And hopefully someone will respond. Thank you very much. And hopefully, like I said, people will respond. And
Ray.
Rush,
if you build it, they will come.
That was the theory.
Ray.
Rush just had things like, "My friends, I'm broadcasting live from the hollowed out insides of a General Steel building while listening to my wave radio." Dan pointed out, I hope they didn't waste a COVID vaccine on him. Oh, what do you want to bet they did? I wasn't even thinking about that.
Well, what are the chances that the lung cancer was an underlying cause of demise?
Well, that's what I was asking earlier, because they said he died from complications of lung cancer.
Well,
COVID would certainly complicate lung cancer, and he was in fucking Florida. The Southern Command of the COVID virus. Mm-hmm.
Well, I can hardly believe it. And I'm not complaining, mind you. I am not complaining, not one bit.
Oh wait, I screwed up. It's not a When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge. It's the Biden Likes Wage Hikes challenge, which is clever and rhymes and stuff. So that's on the, and we haven't even talked about the town hall last night, except the passing mention that I made of it to note that. That sleazy former White House spokescreep somehow managed to make something dirty out of Joe Biden saying that he likes kids. So we know where the little blonde Christian's mind is at.
No, yeah. I missed that. What was that about?
Just Kali Maganini.
Oh, geez.
Being sickening and disgusting and creepy and sleazy and filthy and nasty.
Oh, herself, you mean?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, says Randy in PA, with flooring by Lumber Liquidators.
Yeah.
chopped down in a deforested part of one of the last remaining decent wild places in the world. Who needs those? But I had a note from Todd earlier saying, it is unfortunate that the family of the St. Louis Satan will find it difficult to dispose of the remains. They are simply too toxic for any crematorium, dump, or cemetery. Special arrangements will be necessary. On a lighter note, this could be the dawning of a new day. Note the timing of the ascendancy of Biden, the Rocky-type loser and one-time winner of the presidency, making incredible gains in a relatively short period of time. We want the Florentine Films violin. Shelby Foote will be proud of you and Scott. And when I played it, I got a yes from Todd. So the program has justified its own existence.
Well, I'll tell you, I hadn't intended to go on at length because I'm tired of thinking about him. I'm tired of talking about him. I was tired of him from his
first
day.
Yeah, we'll be done with this program. You know? I mean, we've kind of thrown away a perfectly good prayer meeting Wednesday on that scumbag.
No, I think it's good to note the passing of such scum. You know, if somebody dumped a load of it on your front lawn, you'd talk about it. And I think he was a load. I think he was most definitely a load. But I was going to say I'll go ahead and go because I know that, and I think it's good that we remember him as he was. That's one of the problems with eulogies and services of that type. Most people, you don't want to say ill of the dead. But in the case of this fat bastard, fuck him. The more truth that you tell, the better it is, you know? And I'm sure that others have their own fond memories of that cretin. Okay, so what are you doing?
Typing.
Oh, ad libs or what?
I have to answer a question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead.
Is the caller there?
I'm still here. The fact that you can hear me typing means I'm still here, Scott.
Oh, all right. Well, no, I'm just saying that for the Horn family and anybody else that's listening, I heard the news today. Oh boy! Oh boy!
Oh, I screwed up the joke though. Randy and PA with flooring by liquid lumber daters. That's even funnier.
Yeah. Didn't he also have a steel building?
General Steel Buildings, my friend. It's where I drink my Snapple.
God. Oh, and Snapple. That's another thing. If I Once I heard that he was hawking Snapple, I don't care if it makes you 20 years younger.
I never bought another Snapple afterward, and I told him so.
I would die of thirst before I would put that to my lips.
And when he started hawking some fucking mattress, they got a note too.
Yeah, I just.
And of course, he was just a law student when he started, and he was on this program, tweeting and stuff. Angelo Carasone was on, or Carasone, I don't know if you pronounce the E. I don't recall. He's a nice guy. But he started going after Rush's advertisers and built this, and he's largely responsible for the backlash after the Sandra Fluck episode.
Yeah.
And he'd been working on that beforehand. And he is now over, I believe he's still over at Media Matters. And nobody did a better job than Media Matters of documenting all of his sleazy filth. Let me look there.
Did you ever read Al Franken's book, Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
He did a pretty good job of just telling it like it was. I'm tired of. How are you doing? Are you okay?
Yeah, there's a lot going on down here.
You got hot dogs for the kids and pony rides and a little Ferris wheel.
Don't forget the balloons and records from the cutout bin.
That's right. That's right, my friend.
Yeah, over at Media Matters, they've got a headline story at the top of the page. Rush Limbaugh sold listeners a false reality, and we're still all paying for it. And one of the things that comes to mind is that we are still paying for it. For instance, this bullshit story about how the failure of the electrical grid in Texas was the result of windmills. And had he not been busy dying, I'm sure Flush Flimball would have pushed that too. Only 16% of the Texas electrical grid comes from wind energy. And the reason the windmills froze up is because the damned idiots in the damned idiot Republicans in Texas bought windmills that would freeze in cold temperatures. I hate to break it to the Texas Electrical Commission or whatever, but it does get cold from time to time in Texas. I've seen it snow on the Cotton Bowl on New Year's Day, by God. And
well, I was living in Corpus Christi back in the mid-90s, early 90s, when it got colder than a witch's upper frontal. well, the digger's ass, yes. Put it this way, that night the brass monkeys came in, okay?
There are wind turbines that you use for semi-tropical and tropical areas, like the ones that you can see turning as you say your cruise ship pulls up to San Juan, Puerto Rico. And then there's the ones that you use, like, say, in Iowegia or Talibandiana. And those don't freeze up in hard weather. But I'm sure the fiscal conservatives in Texas said, well, it costs a little less to have the ones that'll freeze up. And, well, hell, it ain't never going to get cold in Texas. Even though it gets cold in, Texas.
And that's the principal operating feature or intent of a power generating windmill. The fucker must be able to turn, okay, when the wind blows.
And of course, anyway. In line with what you mentioned a moment ago, I've got a clip here. It takes a little bit of time. But, of course, they immediately put on their sackcloth and ashes over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And who did they call in to mourn Flush Flimball? Well, I just happen to have it right here.
Palm Beach, Florida, where the news of Rush Limbaugh is now starting to spread across the country and around the world. Rush Limbaugh, the iconic radio, conservative radio host, dead at the age of 70, succumbing to lung cancer after a 12-and-a-half-month battle. By telephone, former President Trump continues with us today. And, sir, thank you again for your time. I was trying to jump in.
Wait. I need to back up for just a second here. Hold on.
What did Rush Limbaugh tell you? A radio host dead at the age of 70.
Yeah, we got that part. We're still glad.
Lung cancer after a 12-and-a-half-month battle. By telephone, former President Trump continues.
He called him former president.
Thank you again for your time. I was trying to jump in there a moment ago. I apologize for that, Harris. What did Rush
Harris
tell you?
Wait, I apologize for that, Harris. Is he thinking about Kamala? Is there something Bill Hemmer would like to tell us? I apologize for that, Harris.
Or maybe harassment. Or
is
maybe
that harassment? No, I think it's heresy. But sorry.
What were those conversations like?
Well, Rush thought we won. So do I, by the way. I think we won substantially.
Still preaching the big lie.
I thought we won, and he thought it was over at 10 o'clock, 10:30, it was over. And a lot of other people feel that way, too, but Rush felt that way strongly.
Feelings, nothing more than feelings. The only people who thought it was over at 10:30 are people who live under a bell jar at Ripley's Believe It or Not Auditorium. But even with the death of his dearly beloved friend to whom he awarded the same thing, the same award that Nelson Mandela and Mother Teresa got, the Presidential Medal of Freedom, even when he's called on to mourn the death of America's truth detector, Nitwit Nero still uses the time to spread the big, filthy lie. Fuck him.
It's about me. It's about me. Don't you know? It's about me.
Me.
And isn't it interesting that we haven't heard word one from that orange demented circus peanut from the moment he left Washington on the old chopper in anticipation of having to sit up on the platform and see Mr. Biden and Ms. Harris sworn in? He couldn't stomach that. And we've heard nary a peep out of the fucker, you know, through the impeachment. Okay.
Yeah.
And this is what he comes out of his hole for, his bunker.
Precisely. Bilable Rick said, I just found out that one of the great grandparents of capital insurrectionist L. Brent Bozo IV is none other than William Frank Buckley Sr. The apple has not fallen far from the MAGA tree. How about that? And
William F. Buckley?
I don't think it's William F. Buckley Jr. from Poughkeepsie.
No, probably not.
Think of a worse thing, Matt in San Francisco says. I can't think of a worse thing than 45 spewing hate daily upon the public's airwaves. So it will probably happen.
Well, and I, like, when I mentioned it to you on the, I believe I mentioned it just in passing, when I read it, on the program, and I was hesitating about doing it because that's not something you want out in the universe.
It's already been whispered, so I think it's okay. I think we're okay to talk about it.
Okay, well, I personally don't think it'll come to pass, but that, believe me, should it go the other way, I fear for our future. Because we've already seen, how long was that speech on January 6th? That rant, I'm sorry, it wasn't a speech.
That was a Castrovian stemwinder.
Well, okay, but it wasn't 3 hours worth.
No, not quite. He doesn't have that in him. He's not as vigorous as Castro was.
Even if you take out the 22 minutes an hour of commercials and local programming in a typical hour of the Limbaugh show.
Right, and Jason Miller and Stephen Miller just script it all for him. Bang, done.
Now, I think Jason Miller played Max von Sydow's partner in The Exorcist, if memory serves.
Oh, who's the who's the little Jason creep that that's his spokes creep now?
Who knows?
Who cares?
Who knows? I mean, you know, some of these guys that they're turned down at the blood selling place, and they've got to find work doing something. They probably, you just don't know where he gets his staff. He doesn't pay them, so he can get paid to give blood or plasma. Plasma, say.
Well, in the case of Stephen Miller, he got him at Capo's R Us.
Well, Stephen Miller got his start modeling caskets for vampires. You know, the vampire showroom. Vampire casket showroom. Only open at night because that's when the vampires shop. Everybody knows this, Bob. But
look at this lovely satin interior.
Yes. And you can get racing stripes if your interests go that way.
Or if you're nitwit, or if you're nitwit Nero and have a hard time controlling things, you can just add your own.
Yes.
See also skid marks.
Oh, those racing stripes. Well, we didn't call them that when I was a child. You made a boo-boo. You made a boo-boo in your BBB.
Okay, let's just leave it. Don't work the joke to death, Scott. Albert in Rhode Island said, I lived in Texas for most of my life. When Houston got hit with 2 inches of snow, about 99.99% of the city gets shut down. That's the way it was where I grew up, too. Inch of snow, martial law, not a crumb of bread, nor a portion of an eggshell, nor a drop of milk left in the grocery store.
Well, even as far south as D.C., having grown up there, you get an inch of snow and the entire federal government gets the day off.
Oh, a snow day in D.C. is a beautiful thing because it's just quiet. It's just quiet.
Well, it is.
And the roads, you know, the roads are all covered in snow. And I love when a snowfall is fresh. I love how it, you worked in radio, you know what it means to dampen sound. Snow dampens sound.
Oh yeah.
And there a literal hush falls over the city, and I'm using that voice. Okay, stop.
Yes, sir. And I don't miss it. I love to see it on TV. I love to see it in picture books and in films. But I had my fill of it, Robin, growing up in it.
Oh.
And then foolishly living 20 years in the Midwest.
Well, you know, I was telling Steve in New York earlier today that we're still dodging bullets here. Now, it may not last. Apparently, Thursday into Friday, we're under a winter storm warning now. It's finally getting to us. And I guess we're going to get hammered Thursday into Friday or something like that. But I told Steve that my personal theory is that we've dodged all of these winter weather bullets because of the I'm now taking advantage of my profound powers that were accorded me by joining the LGBTQ+ community, and so consequently I can now volcanoes, earthquakes, tsunamis, and holding off winter storms. I'm doing my best here, folks. Maybe if I was in Texas, it wouldn't have happened, but sorry. But that's just, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's about a half hour left, 32 minutes left on the program. I have scotabobstered enough, but I've scotabustered enough. I just wanted to note, with no degree, no discernible, not a molecule of sadness, the passing of L. Rushbaugh.
Not an iota. Not a scintilla uris.
Yeah, not even a tiny, minuscule particle seen only with an electron microscope.
Or discovered with the large electron the Haldol collider or whatever it is, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Not even that.
Not even a discernible speck of an atom, an ATOM, an atom's worth of sadness emanating from me on this grand and glorious day.
And it's because you love the broadcast. It's because you love the broadcast arts.
Even more than that, it's even more basic, Robin. I love truth and reality-based reality. I am not a fan of bullshit, even though I have done my share of bullshitting people. You have to in today's world. But God damn it, someone for that many years who has a three-hour, five-day-a-week national platform owes the listening public and the industry and reality a nod in its direction. But he didn't do that. And for that reason, fuck him. He can burn. He can go down in the briny deep with Bin Laden. I don't care what they do with him. Don't bring him around here. That's all I'm saying.
And I'm almost I'm almost afraid of I'm almost afraid of turning on the for-profit the TV media, because there's going to be a couple of days worth of obligatory bullshit grieving. And I don't have the stomach for it. I know that fucker's story too well.
Well, like I said, if you haven't already done it, read the New York Times obit, the front page obit. And because if you want a quick access, I posted it along with an appropriate graphic. They took a picture of him from 1994 in shadow, this artsy fartsy sort of photo. And it, all that's missing, they must have airbrushed Goodyear off the side of him. Because he had to be, and I'm not making fat jokes here. He was just a tub of inconsequential lard when it comes right down to it.
Well, like I said at the beginning of the program, the late great Bart Cops page began as something titled on one of the internet bulletin boards. You know, ding ding ding. It began as Rush Limbaugh lying Nazi whore, and as far as I'm concerned, that is the very best.
No, it was correct and succinct then, and it is this very day. Except put the late before that, and you've got it. You've corrected it for the day and date.
Exactly, Scott. Have yourself a good evening.
All right, you take care, and my best to the family and the extended Horn family. You're wonderful folks, and I love you. Mwah.
Okay, see ya. Later, Scott. Yeah. Bye now. The one and only Scott in San Diego. Question coming from... yes, that's correct, Brother Deacon Asa, as to the identity of you-know-who. Yeah, it's a wireless keyboard, and I hate it, but it's really, really clacky, and I bought it in a pinch because I had to have a keyboard, and, well, Wally World didn't have any nice ones. So this is a $10 Wally World Logitech keyboard, and it sucks because it's all crammed together. It doesn't even have a number pad. It's got a trackpad instead, and it just bites. Billable Rick says, as far as a Trump radio show is concerned, there's no way that COVID Caligula will do a three-hour radio program 5 days a week. Not only is he too lazy to do show prep for a three-hour radio show, but he also couldn't sit still long enough to be briefed by Nazi capo Stephen Miller. Plus, Trump literally has no time to work these days because it would interfere with his busy golf schedule. You know, you probably should have left that one out, Billable, because we know about your busy golf schedule, too. Our buddy Norseman Rick said earlier, I just wanted to thank Scott for what he said last night after I called. So, Scott, your words were appreciated. And so here we are with 27 minutes to go in the program, trying to finish off a $25 challenge. There's $15 left on that. There's a $50 challenge behind that that will at least get us finished with Monday's funding and start on Tuesday's. So hopefully that'll happen in the remaining minutes of the program. Well, this is fun. Gizmodo reporting, one of Trump's law firms has gotten its data stolen by hackers. Oh, dear. The Hill reported that during the trial last week that Bruce Castor got demoted and that Nitwit Nero didn't want to see him on TV anymore during the trial. And that caused Castor to throw a giant fit and stomp out of the room. All this via the New York Times, and the New York Times got it from half a dozen people who were in the room to verify the account. Oh, my. And this, just catching up, this is a doozy. We're going to find out more and more and more about the people who were involved in the attack on the Capitol. The Department of Homeland Security, this is reported by Vice, the Department of Homeland Security has confirmed, no kidding, that a neo-Nazi leader is a former employee of the Department of Homeland Security. Well, that's some vetting they got going on there, isn't it? The Department of Homeland Security confirmed it once employed an American neo-Nazi terror leader now based in Russia after he posted what he said were letters of appreciation that DHS and the Pentagon sent him, thanking him for his service. Well, of course they did. Rinaldo Nazzaro, aged 47, founder and leader of The Base, if you care to translate that into Arabic, it becomes Al-Qaeda, one of the most violent American domestic terror groups in years, posted three undated letters from U.S. agencies lauding him for his service. One was from DHS, an agency tasked with yada, yada, yada. All spoke glowingly of Nazzaro. Since late 2019, nine members of The Base, the group he founded, have been arrested in the U.S. for alleged crimes as wide-ranging as an assassination plot, ghost gun-making, plans for train derailments, and a mass shooting. And it has been declared, at least by the Canadian government, as a terrorist organization. But since they're right-wing, I mean, we wouldn't want to do that here. No, hell no. Thank you very kindly indeed. Ralph's has finished off Joey and Giraffe's challenge. That means there's $20 to go finishing Monday's fundraising. And then that is wiped out if someone will answer the or respond to or meet the anonymous Biden likes wage hikes challenge. And that would be fantastic. And you're more than welcome, Norseman Rick. More than welcome indeed. Back over to the stress line. Reggie has been very patient. Hey, Reggie, how are you?
How you doing, Bob? Happy hump day to you, man. You brought up the... Go ahead, Bob.
No, please, you.
Oh, well, I thought that the pioneers of talk radio were, well, Don Imus, Bob Grant, and yes, I dare say it, Howard Stern.
Well, so Bob Grant,
Don Imus and Howard Stern.
You can't leave out Larry King.
Oh, yeah, him too. That's right. Yeah. Bob Grant, Don Imus, Larry King, and Howard Stern. That's four people. They changed the face of talk radio forever, or should I say the sound of talk radio forever. You know, there will never be any more like the three of them, at least, or even Howard Stern when he passes. There will never be others like them. Never again, man. I guess when God created them, he broke the mold on all four of them. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, Imus had his own problems. Howard Stern, you know, he does some serious interviews, but a lot of it is just, you know, seventh grade dirty joke shtick, and that's cool. People want to tune into it.
Right.
Bob Grant was as right was vile and right wing. I mean, there are a lot of people doing the format before Rush Limbaugh. There just were. At one point in time, and I actually happened to run it, ABC Radio Networks had a pretty liberal lineup in the mid-80s, and it was fun to listen to. It was good radio.
Right.
One of the cats was a guy with some sort of a posh accent, and unfortunately, his name was Michael Jackson. That was not a great time to be named Michael Jackson, because it just meant that you were constantly confused with the King of Pop. But he was doing fairly liberal stuff, and he was doing it out of, I think, what was it? KABC in Los Angeles. And there were people doing financial talk radio. Sally Jesse Raphael. I don't know if you remember her or not. She of the big glasses. Before she got a syndicated TV gig, she was doing sort of relationship radio. Before that horrible Harridan. What's her name? She was terrible. Dr. Laura came along. There were lots of people who were pioneering the format before Rush Limbaugh.
Right. Didn't Jerry Springer do talk radio?
Oh, yeah. I think, yeah. Well, I mean, he certainly did it with Air America. But he got his start in radio and TV in the Cincinnati market.
Exactly. And like you said, Martin Downey Jr., you know.
Yeah.
He did talk radio too, did he not?
Yeah, well, Morton Downey was holding down the fort in Sacramento, and Limbaugh would fill in for him. And as Scott pointed out, he got snatched up by WOR to go to TV, and then Limbaugh got his slot, and the rest, as they say, is the history of the demise of American decency.
Right, and of talk radio too, as well, you know. Like you said, talk radio is predominantly conservative dominated or laden, with a few progressives like yourself left, or some progressives like such as yourself left. But as you said, the ones who will never ever do hate talk radio are, well, Mike Malloy, Rick Smith, Tom Hartman, you, Leslie Marshall, Randy Rosen, Stephanie Miller, and Nicole Sandler. That's eight people. You guys will never ever do hate talk radio, period. You don't have to, and you don't need to. Get your listeners.
Well, frankly, the people who tune in on our side won't go for that. I mean, it's one thing to it's one thing to clown around and carry on a little bit here and there. It is entirely another. It's entirely another to engage in manifest hate against marginalized communities. And there's nothing marginalized about aggrieved white people.
Right.
They are still dominant in American society.
Yeah. Just like talk radio. But now that Rush is gone, you got Mark Levin and, of course, Michael the Wiener Savage left.
Yeah, but the Savage Wiener's just hanging on by a thread.
Oh. Well, he's in his 70s, too, you know. I think he's in his 70s, too. But you have, like you said, Alex Jones and Mark Levin. And anybody else who's on talk radio. You know. I guess Roger Stone is one. And Steve Bannon's another one, right? Are they doing talk radio now, or am I wrong on that?
I don't listen to them enough to know who all's there, but I mean, we know Frau Ingram is there. We know the Hannity job is there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Yeah, that's true. They're on Fox too. You know, they're on Fox TV too. They got both jobs. On the did you dare watch the town hall meeting last night on CNN? Joe Biden's town hall meeting.
I caught clips of it later. I didn't watch the whole thing, and frankly, you know, I would see it pop up, see comments about it pop up on Twitter, and that was okay by me. Because this sounds a little bit like an excuse. Maybe it is, but
yes.
when my day is over, my day is over.
Right. The last thing you want to do is
the only thing I do is tune in to Malloy. And Rick Smith.
Right.
I mean, I don't need to be convinced. I'm supportive of Joe Biden. There are things that he will do and things that he won't do that are not going to please me, but I'm going to be a political adult about it instead of a baby. And I'm going to understand that I'm going to disagree with him. You know, I saw a whole bunch of pissing and moaning about student loan forgiveness. And he said, you know, maybe forgive 10,000, but not 50, because he's afraid that it'll benefit the people who went to the really expensive college. Now, bullshit. He's just wrong about that. But the nice thing is, Reggie, is he can be dragged more toward our side. We've at least got a chance. If we advocate well enough, we might get what we want. That will never happen with a Republican president.
True. And speaking of which, I think one of them asked him about Trump, and he said he's so damn sick and tired of talking about, or even he's so damn sick and tired of even thinking about, let alone talking about Trump. He wants to move forward and worry about the future, the near future.
Yeah, and that was the funniest thing coming out of it, Reggie, was his referring to Trump as that other guy.
Yeah, exactly.
And he knows how much that burned him, because he knew he was watching.
How dare he call me the other guy? Why can't he call me at least the president? Not the former. I'm still the president!
You know, that kind of shit.
I mean, he's so damn sick and tired of talking about him or hearing about him or even thinking about him. Let's focus on the hearing now and the future or near future. You know, let's focus on getting rid of this pandemic once and for all and going back to work and help the American people as he promises that he's going to do once he got up there in office. You know, I don't know why they asked him that question. But he doesn't want to think about him anymore. Is he right not to? I mean, you know, he talked about him enough.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. I don't take any convincing. He was right in pushing the $15 an hour minimum wage, but the reality is that a $15 minimum wage isn't even a living wage. But then you get the people, well, you know, we can't just run it up to $25 immediately. I mean, it'll crash the American economy. Bullshit. Because I've got, and some people may take issue with me, and that's okay, Reggie. But the bottom line is what Biden said, you know, if you're a small business owner, you have a right to be concerned about the $15 minimum wage, blah, 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 blah. Bullshit. No, I disagree with him there, too. If the only way you can stay in business is to pay somebody starvation poverty wages, you don't deserve to be in business, because you are in business under fraudulent pretenses.
Right. That's true. But why would he say something like that? I mean, you know,
because he's trying to he's trying to mollify the hand-wringing center.
He's trying to modify or please or appease.
Yeah, mollify. M-O-L-L-I-F-Y.
He's trying to mollify, appease, or please the hand-wringing center. You know what I mean? The pearl-clutching hand-wringing center, Bob? You know. Oh, my stars and garters, you know?
Yeah.
He's trying to please them. He can't please everybody. Remember Ricky Nelson. You can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself, right?
Right.
You know what I mean? Exactly. That's what Ricky Nelson's saying. Maybe he should go by that standard, you know. Well,
I hadn't thought about that song in forever, Reggie. My God, what a reference.
Yeah, but, you know, he can't please everybody, so he has to, well, please himself, or at least the people he can please. But you can't please the entire planet, man. That's impossible. You know? And he wants to work with the American people and, you know, get rid of this pandemic once and for all. You know, and help people. I mean, isn't that why he got elected? Isn't that why we put him there? Isn't that why he ran for president? Or is it just me?
No, I don't think it's just you.
Isn't that why he... Well, so that's what he's trying to do. But like you said, you know, like you said, talk to me. You say you don't like watching, you know, political convention / beauty pageant. I don't like, I refer to town hall meetings as that too. You know, so they're asking him these questions. Some relevant, some not. You know, the moderators, the commentators, the journalists, you know, people like that.
Yeah.
Was Wolfie there? Oh, that's right. You didn't watch it. You know who I'm talking about, the robot. Well, he was there, the robot, Wolfie Blitz.
I
heard him.
U-boat commander Wolf Blitzer? Yeah. I think that's what Malloy used to call
him. Yeah, him. I mean, yeah, him. Why would he call him that, Bob?
I don't know.
Yeah, oh, well.
I just remember him using that term. But yeah, I gotta roll on out of here, Reggie. You have yourself a good evening, and my God, stay warm. I hope you guys aren't getting hammered down in Decatur.
No, we're not as much. It's just windy and cold and rainy down here, but no snow, not a drop.
Well, the snow starts about 1 o'clock this morning for us and goes all evening long and then turns into, you know, ice and freezing rain. Yay.
I hope your power doesn't go up.
I do
I hope
too.
Your power doesn't go out.
I'm doing all I can to use my powers to keep it from happening, but I've only got so much.
Right. Well, I hope. Do you think that the passing of Rush Limbaugh will mean the end of conservative talk radio?
Or hell no! I had a note from Darlene a few minutes ago. Darlene in Connecticut. She said Reggie hit on it. Bob Grant was the precursor to Limp Balls, and don't forget that Babel O'Reilly was mixed in there too, overtaking Grant. Sadly, there are more of these gas bags to follow. Don't forget Laura Schlesinger too.
Right.
But no, there's right. the fight now will be over his time slot.
Who's going to take it over permanently now that he's gone?
Yeah, I mean, if I was Premier Radio Networks, I'd try to strike a deal with Nitwit Nero. If he just got behind the microphone and played with himself and talked, the Ditto Monkeys will tune in for that, and they'll buy anything he hawks.
Right, but you know,
come on down and pay the $200,000 initiation fee at Mar-a-Lago. You'll love it. It's great. We've got the best bed bugs. Only the best bed bugs.
Well, who wants to go down there, number one and two?
Are you kidding? Maggots all over the country think, if only we could come up with the money to go and stay at Mar-a-Lago, my God, Marvelline, wouldn't that just be the best anniversary we ever had? Sure.
Yeah, they could. Yeah, right. They got to work very, very hard to make $200,000. They got to work blood, sweat, and tears. You know what I mean?
And it would be worth it just to stay in the same place where our God Emperor stays.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Who wants to go there, man? The building's probably infested with cockroaches, bed bugs, rats, and God knows what. You know what I mean? And it's probably
you couldn't pay me to stay there. I feel bad for the Secret Service agents who had to. They probably had to go home and burn burn their black suits and their white shirts and their black ties and just get a new one because who knows what you're bringing in after you've been there.
That's true. That's so very true. I mean, you know, they should tear that building down.
Well, at least the helipad's gone. The folks in, what is it, Palm Beach? took that away. The city fathers, city mothers, city parents. They took that away from him. It was it was a rough day for him today. His pet pot-bellied pig, Rush Limbaugh, died. They took out his helipad, and then he had to watch them blow up his first hotel.
Right.
In Atlantic City.
Did his own head explode when they did that to him? I wonder, did his own head explode?
Exactly.
I'm sure he was turning beet red. Huh?
Well, no, he's turning orange.
I'm sure he was turning beet red.
No, he's turning orange. Oranger, Reggie. As Arthur says,
certified Slovenian bed bugs, folks. Only the best bed bugs, folks.
Exactly. Reggie, you have yourself a good night and take care, all right?
All right. One more thing. Do you think they'll pay him as much money as Rush Limbaugh if he took over his time slot?
They'd pay him twice as much because the whole thing would be sponsored by Mr. Pillow.
Right. Will they pay him $800 million? If they had that money,
I honestly don't know how stupid they are.
Right, or desperate. But nobody's going to want to listen to that or him anyway.
Don't you be so sure? That's a certified market, and it's a certifiable market too. Reggie, take care, my friend. Be good. All right.
Yeah, you do too, Bob.
See ya. That's our buddy Reggie wrapping up the program this evening. Well, hopefully this is the end of that discussion. Let the dead past bury its dead, and let the Lord of the Underworld take care of his new lodger. Right? A riddle coming in from Scott in San Diego. What's the difference between Rush Limbaugh and the Hindenburg? One was a fat Nazi gas bag, and the other was a Zeppelin. Oh, wait a minute. That's just beautiful. That's suitable to end the program on. Thanks, everybody, for joining in the conversation. Please remember, there is a $50 challenge on the table as we go forward this evening. And we will hopefully knock things down a little bit. Because remember, liberal, progressive, independent radio doesn't work or exist the same way that it works over on the right-wing side. We don't have little or big, wealthy stink tanks and wingnut welfare outfits to quietly funnel us a gajillion dollars. You know, I joke about the Olympic-sized kidney-shaped, pancreas-shaped swimming pool here. It really is a joke. So, hopefully, we'll keep things going through and have another month of broadcasting and another month of that, but we do need to keep up with the funding. I'm sorry. Profoundly sorry. That's how this thing, it's the only way this thing has worked over the course of nearly two decades. How about that? Limbaugh was good for about 30 years. And done. You realize Malloy has been on the air longer than Limbaugh? Mm-hmm. Tells you something about the longevity of decency. Of course, I've long said that Malloy is the godfather of liberal progressive talk radio, because he is, and I'm proud that he's my friend. And he, by the way, is coming your way with a brand new episode at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is right here at headon.live. Thanks to all of our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to our subscribers via the U.S. Postal Service. Thank you so very much to Dennis in Columbus. Thank you very kindly to Brandon and Fennell. I went to the mailbox and saw those. Thank you very much. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. You know what? You can listen, if you could. He hid his archives. Ours are out there for the listening for anybody who wants it. Silly little non-capitalists that we are. I can't recall Flush Flimball, the oxymoron, ever thanking people for sharing their time with him. Because, frankly, he didn't give a good goddamn about the people who shared their time with him. What Flush Flimball cared about could be measured only in terms of bank accounts and things. He had no respect, no appreciation, no love for the fact that people shared their lives with him. I do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Pinch Hit, Midweek Chat Room, Utility Moderator, and all-around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. I know it's rough. You just got to gut through it, Ben, and we're thinking of you. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please, stay safe. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Wear nitrile gloves when you're out if you possibly can. Use hand sanitizer liberally. Maintain your social distance 15 feet between people wearing masks and 15 million feet between isn't enough between you and someone who doesn't have one on. And if somebody comes up to you saying, "I've got talent on loan from God," avoid that person like the plague, because he is, and he's dead. He's dead, Jim. Later.